Know the truth.
Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the fishing vest of free speech because you can put all sorts of stuff in that fishing vest. You got lots of pockets for your keys, for your weights, for your various bobs and whatever else. And that's really great. They have so much variety just in that one fishing vest. And you get a lot of variety in republicbroadcasting.org. So click on the button. It says donate. It'll tell you how to donate and keep RBN going with that badly needed fundage. Okay, well, today is Monday. Monday is the day that Mark Collett joins us. And, wow, what a day. I guess you're just minutes away from knowing for sure who your next PM is going to be. Do we have any?
Well, we do. It's most likely to be Rishi Sunak. I can't see it being anybody else. I can't see anybody else being crowned Prime Minister. I believe appointed by Mr. I mean, you know what I mean. Basically, it looked like it was going to be Rishi Sunak or Boris Johnson or potentially Boris Johnson again, but in a power-sharing agreement with Sunak. However, Johnson sensationally just pulled out. So, yeah, I don't know what to say there. That, to me, was very strange because Johnson, you've got to remember, before we talk about this, let's have a look at how it went down. Johnson took over from the very unpopular Theresa May. He got a massive 80-seat majority, giving the Conservative Party the power to actually make good on a number of different things that they'd promised and to basically do pretty much what they wanted in terms of legislation. Now, obviously, the bigger the majority, the more likely it is that you can push things through, that you can actually make things happen in the House of Commons. And he gave them that. He delivered them this absolutely fabulous win. And by the time he got them this win, we were 10 years deep into a Conservative Party government. Now, that's even stranger, because usually when you're a decade deep into any government, that government is starting to crack. It's starting to show its age. It's starting to look less and less viable as a power-winning party, because obviously, you make more mistakes. The public remembers the mistakes more than they remember the good things. And then eventually, these mistakes build and build and build and build until they say, enough is enough. We will go no more with this. And the government gets booted out. That is generally the order of things anywhere in the world. Well, certainly in the Western world. That might not be the case in certain countries, but in the Western world, in quote-unquote democratic nations, that's generally how things happen. Now, Johnson gets in with this epic majority, and everyone loves him. And he's done something no Conservative government has really ever done. He's reached out to both the traditional Conservatives, and he's reached out to the what's called the Red Wall. He's broken down the Red Wall. He's got involved. He's got him to a situation where traditional Labour voters in their heartlands actually love him and think he's wonderful, because he's made pledges on mass immigration, on Brexit, on a lot of common sense things that normal folk want to hear about and want a government to stand up for. And then it all goes horrifically wrong. COVID comes along. He's part of this, basically plot to see normal people have their rights taken away. And from that point onwards, everything goes horrifically wrong for Boris. And eventually, he is brought down via what was now known as Partygate. He's brought down because, unfortunately, he held a little party, or a couple of little parties, in Downing Street where people didn't put the silly little masks on and they didn't do what they were, or what they said that the public should have done. And this broke him and the Conservative government. And he was forced to resign over this. And that has been something that has led to this downward spiral, really, of the Conservative government, this massive downward spiral. But here's the interesting thing, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
They replaced him with Liz Truss, and Liz Truss is the shortest-serving prime minister in British history. She's an absolute disaster. You couldn't say anything good about the woman. It was an absolute disaster. You know, usually when a prime minister goes out, they say something about what they've achieved. They have a little list. Even if they've gone out in a bad way, they will say, well, you know, I achieved this, I did this, you know, I met these people, I took this message to the world. She can't really even say that because, really, she didn't even settle into Downing Street properly. It was a completely disastrous
run. She held a funeral for the Queen.
Yeah. So, you know, people have said that. It's funny you bring that up, because I've heard people who are very, you know, obviously very uncharitable about her say that. Say, you know, she came in to the government, and as she came into the government, what has she achieved other than seeing the Queen off? Nothing. You know, I would say, had it not been for the death of the Queen and the fact she announced that to the nation, I don't think there's anything you could say about her, is there? There's nothing. You know, nothing. Other than seeing the nation through that dark time, you know, where people were mourning, etc., there's nothing you can say about her.
I mean, she looks like Blackadder's girlfriend.
Well, she's, yeah. There's very little you could say about her. So, looking at this, looking at the disaster that was Truss, looking at what Johnson brought to the Conservative Party, what do you think would be the logical step forward? Well, the logical step forward, whether we like it or not, which we may do, we may not, Johnson was obviously a liar, he was obviously somebody who didn't make good on his election promises, you'd think that Johnson would be brought back, but he hasn't. What's actually happened is Johnson is out, again. Sunak is in, and Penny Mordaunt has got until 2:15 today to get 100 nominations. And if she fails to get those 100 nominations, she is out as well, and Britain will have its first non-white prime minister. I don't think she'll get the nominations. I don't think she can get the nominations. I don't think she's got the support. And even if she did initially have the support, I would say that is ebbing away, because the Conservatives do not want a leadership race. The Conservatives simply want to appoint somebody ASAP, get it out of the way, and jobs are good, and we've got a new Prime Minister, and they don't have to have several more, you know, say another month of damaging and embarrassing, you know, infighting. They've said it wouldn't be a month. They've said whatever happened, they were going to get a new prime minister installed by the end of the week to stop the embarrassment. Right. But whether that could have actually happened, who knows? Who knows what would have gone
on? Well, I mean, it was supposedly going to be through electronic voting this time rather than mailing voting. And, wow, that who knows what would have happened there? There could have been all sorts of other scandals. Well, you're about to get your first non-white Prime Minister, congratulations. Bit late on that, don't you think?
Well, I'll tell you this. Whatever happens from here on in, whatever happens, this is going to be a disaster for the country, but also a disaster for the Conservative Party. Because the Conservative Party are not going to come out of this unscathed. They will come out of this in a very, very bad way. It already looks extremely bad for them, what they've gone through. I think people have pretty much lost all their faith in the Conservative Party. And I think a non-white Prime Minister will not be popular either with the general public. And I don't think it'll be popular with your rank and file conservatives either. I think the whole thing for the conservatives now was meant to be damage limitation. But I think damage limitation would have actually been bringing Boris back. Damage limitation is not taking this gamble on Rishi Sunak. And I would say that this could potentially lead to the end of the Conservative Party as we know it, the end of the Conservatives as we know it. And I think that puts us in an interesting position in this country, because it could lead to genuine change. However, saying that, I'm well aware that it could also lead to nothing, to just more of the same. And you know, and I know, that that is something that happens in Western countries, because that's what democracy is designed to do. Democracy isn't designed to give people actual choices. It's not designed to give people a real say. And my only fear is that what we'll see at the next general election because of this is, rather than a split in the Conservative Party and a genuine sort of traditionalist or nationalist or anti-establishment party taking Conservative votes, the public en masse will just run out and most likely vote for the Labour Party instead. And as much as I despise the Conservative Party, as much as I know that they are just a group of liars, a group of opportunists, people who say what the public want them to say, Labour Party are the same, but probably on steroids. You know, whatever you've seen that's bad from the Conservative Party in the last 12 years, you're probably going to see worse when Labour inevitably get in. And that leaves us in a position where, despite the fact that this anti-white conservative government is destined to fail, what we're going to see as a replacement will most likely be, as I said, actually worse. And you're probably thinking, well, how could it possibly be worse, Mark? How could we possibly end up in a worse position than we're in already? Well, with these politicians, it's more or less a case of hold my beer, look how bad I can do.
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned that it could be the end of the Conservative Party as you know it. And Canada had a Conservative Party. Actually, I think they were technically known as the Progressive Conservative Party. And in 1993, they had a conservative, a new woman, a woman came in, Canada's first woman prime minister, Kim Campbell. And she came in, I believe it was at the end of a long run. There had been Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, who had been prime minister during the, he had been one of Reagan's buddies and I guess Bush's buddies. And then he left, and he left things in the very able hands of Kim Campbell, who within 4 months or so, she was out. And I don't even remember what it was, honestly, but the people didn't like it. And, you know, Canada, what, how many people are in their parliament? It's, you know, it's hundreds. I don't know how many hundreds, it's hundreds. And they held a snap election, and the Conservatives lost, I think, all but two seats. They were decimated. Literally, I think there's only two, maybe about two people who maintained their seats. And so you never know. I mean, you really can have a party collapse. The party did collapse. Eventually a different Conservative Party reformed. It technically a different organization. So this type of thing can happen, and happened in Canada. But just with Boris Johnson, why do you think, because it looked like, you know, he said he would have had no, he had already gotten the support from the 100 or so people he needed to nominate him. And with that, he would have been in this electronic runoff with Rishi Sunak and perhaps Penny Mountbatten or whatever her name was, and regular rank and file conservatives would have had a chance to vote. They, I mean, was there any doubt that he would have not won that election? It seemed like it was there for the taking. Could it be that he's just looking around him and seeing that the environment for any kind of success isn't there, and he's just going to let... Because what he says is that he didn't have the party united behind him. That he was confident he could have won the premiership, but the party was not united behind him. Is it possible that he's just going to let Rishi Sunak come in, be there for a few months or whatever, fail miserably, and then maybe at that point, with no other alternative in sight, that he could get the party united behind him and come back that way? What do you think his actual...
It might be that. It might be the fact that conservatives... You see, these conservatives are obviously strange people, and they obviously are, to some degree, opportunistic. And some of them are seeing, you know, sort of new alliances forming. They're seeing their chance to actually... come out of nowhere, really, and more or less, you know, step into the limelight. Because it's not just about becoming Prime Minister, is it? It's not just about becoming Prime Minister. It's also about being part of the cabinet or securing a better position for yourself. And I think with Boris, some people seemed so bothered about this Partygate thing. They're so bothered about the fact, you know, he didn't wear a mask, or some people in Downing Street were having a beer without masks on. And they're so upset about this that they were willing to sort of split the party and walk away completely over it, as if that was the red line. Now, to me, the red line was the fact that him having the beer with his friends proved that they weren't scared about the virus, because they knew there was nothing to be scared about. That, to me, is the issue. Not that he broke some, you know, arbitrary ruling. That the ruling was wrong. It was based on, you know, false data. And it was there, not for the good of the people, but as a massive power grab and a way to generate huge amounts of profit for, you know, people's friends in Parliament. That, to me, is the big issue. But I've got to say, I do find it very, very odd that when you've got a prime minister who was so popular, who actually managed to achieve such incredible electoral gains, that people would be so desperate to ensure he wasn't in charge. Now, I think the Conservative Party, the parliamentary party, is obviously very, very different from the actual rank and file Conservatives. And I should imagine that the rank and file Conservatives would have actually liked Boris back. They would have been like, yay, get Boris back. That's who we need. You know, Boris Johnson is, you know, the guy that got us that great victory. He's a likeable chap. He's somebody that people felt they could go down the pub with and have a beer with. Now, that's not Rishi Sunak. Not only is Rishi Sunak obviously, you know, of Indian descent, well, so he doesn't
could,
look...
Could you go down to the pub and have a nice, lovely curry with Rishi Sunak?
He's not that kind of guy. Now, I'm not saying people from the Indian subcontinent are unrelatable completely to Brits. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that fundamentally, he is a guy who has made numerous comments about how rich he is, about, you know, working class Brits. He doesn't seem like an approachable, normal guy. He hasn't got that down-to-earth charm that Boris had. And I think that he's not going to do great things for the Conservative Party. And obviously, I'm not mourning this. I'm not going to mourn the death of the Conservative Party, not one bit. But I do believe that from their point of view, Boris would have been a safer bet. But the hysteria around COVID hasn't really gone away in some senses. You know, we still have that hysteria. There are still reports in the paper about it. And some people really did get their bee in the bonnet over this, you know, party. So he met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So he met
so you gave him your heart too. Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We still have that hysteria. There are still reports in the paper about it, and some people really did get their bee in the bonnet over this, Partygate, as it was called at the time. I know you and I talked about it, on many, many different occasions, but we talked about it from a completely different angle to the angle that the press, the media, the other, political pundits and other politicians talked about it. And I've got to say this. If I was a conservative, the reason I would have wanted Johnson out wasn't anything to do with Partygate, not at all. It would actually be because fundamentally, Johnson didn't make good on any of his election pledges. He didn't cut mass immigration. He didn't make any changes that he said he was going to do. That he was going to make. He didn't. He didn't bring in some wonderful points-based immigration system that stopped the wholesale replacement of white British people. He didn't clamp down in any way on the illegal immigrants flooding into the country on a daily basis from across the channel. And this, to me, is the real scandal with Boris Johnson. And I kind of find all of this sort of very, very irritating because ultimately, the Conservative Party is not conservative in any sense. They don't conserve anything. And really, their response to all of this has been the response that the left would take, the response that, you know, liberals on Twitter would take, that fundamentally, you know, the big issue of the day is nothing to actually do with, you know, Boris not making good on his election pledges, but that, as I said, he had a beer without a mask on. And this is really interesting to me because, and this is why it frustrates me, like, obviously, I'm not an idiot. I know the Conservative Party are a gang of liars. I know they don't have our interests at heart. I know that they're not really patriotic. I know they're not really traditionalists. I know they're not really conservatives in the true sense of the word. So what irritates me? What irritates me is that the Conservative Party rank and file, who are, who fundamentally do understand that, who are traditionalists, who are sort of your church-going folk, who are the guys and the ladies that do want mass immigration curtailing, that do want changes to the way Britain's run, why do they stay with the Conservative Party? That's what frustrates me, because there's this huge divide between the Conservative Parliamentary Party and the rank and file. And the rank and file should be saying at this point, hey, we brought Johnson in to get immigration under control, to end this woke madness, to get Brexit done. He didn't make good on those things. He did not make good on those things. That's why we should be angry, not over Partygate. And then they should be saying, well, whatever prime minister replaces him, we either bring him back to give it a proper go and to give him another chance at making good on those things, or we bring somebody in who is absolutely committed to doing the things we want, or we're leaving. But they don't. They're in this constant sort of soft conflict with Conservative Party HQ and the Parliamentary Party that only ever gets resolved in the favour of the Liberals in the Parliamentary Party, which take the what can we call it, the values of the Conservative Party, values in inverted commas, even further to the left. Yet the rank and file stick around. And at that point, you've got to ask yourself, well, what's the point? Why? Why do they stick around? Are they gluttons for punishment? Do they like the abuse? Do they like being consistently misrepresented by the party they're members of? You know, when they pay their however much it is per month or per year to be a member of the Conservative Party, is it some kind of, you know, sadomasochism? Do they like being sort of, you know, tied to the proverbial table and, you know, disrespected and basically beaten by people who don't have their interests at heart? Is it some kind of perverse master and slave relationship they have with that party? I don't know, but they're not going anywhere, regardless of the disrespect that they're regularly shown by the people whose lifestyles and, you know, that they fund, because they are paying, you know, as a paying member of a party, you are upholding that party as an organization, as a system. And if that system just abuses you and everything you stand for and spits in your face, why would you stick around?
So, yeah, it's very odd. And so on the one hand, you have promises made and promises not kept. So,
but it's different in America. It's different in America. Like, for you guys, it's all so different, because even within, you know, I just want to say, even within your organizations like the Republican Party, yes, there is a big difference between establishment Republicans and non-establishment Republicans. But you just had a non-establishment Republican as president.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Barron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules. Like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Complicit news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Both are clear again. Let's sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together.
You know, I just want to say, even within your organizations, like the Republican Party, yes, there is a big difference between establishment Republicans and non-establishment Republicans, but you just had a non-establishment Republican as president. So there seems to be a way around it, but in the UK, not so. Anyway, carry on. Sorry for interrupting.
Well, okay. Just addressing that, first of all, in the United States, we simply do not have political parties the way you do, the way Japan does, the way Germany does. You talked about conservatives, dues paying members. You don't have to pay any dues to be in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. And the parties themselves just aren't very important. You know, in your case, you've got a parliamentary party who is, takes the lead in deciding who the candidate is. And then in certain cases, these dues paying members, which only represents, less than 1% or 1% of the population, something like that. That's a tiny percentage of the population. Then they might have a say as well. But, the parties in the United States, basically their only function, because they don't formulate policy. Really their only function is as referees in the, candidate selection process. Referees. And, also, as fundraisers, but even then, it's not really a leading role in fundraising. So we don't really, we have, in certain ways, we have a no party system. We have a no party system, but we have, a primary system that is, that the parties are involved in, but also that the states regulate a great deal of. So we have this primary system that offers typically two candidates, one under the banner of the Republicans, one under the banner of the Democrats, but the parties themselves really aren't very important. And just to underscore that, I doubt 1% of the people in the United States could name the leaders of the parties. The leader of the Democratic Party is, his name's Jamie Harrison. He's a young black man. I think he's the leader. Maybe he quit. If he quit, that didn't make the news. And nobody knows that. And the leader, the chairman of the Republican Party, what's her name? I forgot her name, but I know that she's Mitt Romney's niece. And people don't know that because it's not that important. Anyway, though, getting on to Boris Johnson. So, you know, he had promises. I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Brexit. I don't know if the Brexit that he, I mean, Britain's no longer part of the EU. I don't know if the Brexit was an acceptable Brexit or not.
It was a messy affair. To put it politely, uh-huh. It was a messy affair. It wasn't okay. Sort of the clean break people wanted. It wasn't a situation. It didn't result in what people had hoped for. And
okay.
It's another great example of Boris being so. What undid the previous prime minister, which was obviously Theresa May, was that she had fundamentally failed on Brexit. Her big thing was she was coming in to get Brexit done. Now, she was not a Brexiteer. She was a Remainer. She was somebody who was fundamentally liberal and opposed to leaving the EU. That was her thing. She was fundamentally opposed to leaving the EU. And she came in and people doubted from day one that she would get the job done. As you would doubt that if the person who's brought in to get the job done is somebody who opposes the job being done, who opposes, you know, the change that is being brought in. You know, if somebody is opposed to the building of a nuclear power plant, you wouldn't put them in charge of building it because, you know, logically they may be the person that would actually prevent it getting built or do something to, you know, force it to run over budget so it's never completed, etc. That's exactly what you had with Theresa May. When she came up with this deal, and the deal was maligned by everyone. Both sides of the house were like, look, this deal is unacceptable. It's not really a deal. It's more of a capitulation. And fundamentally, it did not serve the country well. And one of the things that got Boris in was the fact that he was going to get this done. He was a Brexiteer. He was one of the guys that led the Leave campaign, him and Nigel Farage. And Boris was the man for the job. People saw him as basically a safe hand, as somebody who could fundamentally come in, get it done, and people would then be satisfied with that. And again, this shocked people, because when he did come in to get this job done, he didn't. He just submitted, really, the same Brexit deal as Theresa May, but with a few bells and whistles. So it was essentially, if you like, a pig in lipstick. It didn't work. It caused problems with the border in Northern Ireland, and that was kind of swept to one side. The big thing that Johnson came to power on was immigration and this points-based immigration system. You know, people were genuinely enthusiastic about that. People were genuinely hopeful that this was going to be a watershed moment when it came to Britain's immigration policy. And again, complete failure ensued with that particular issue. And, you know, whatever you say about Johnson, he hasn't made good on anything, really, that he was brought in to do. And then, obviously, he fumbled Brexit. Sorry, not Brexit. He obviously fumbled COVID. Now, at the beginning of COVID, it was very interesting.
You wonder what does fumbled even mean? I mean, it wasn't...
Well, no. You and I spoke about this. At the beginning, he was somebody who was very, very... He was the only world leader, or when I say significant world leader, that was pushing back against COVID initially. And the first thing he said was that we needed to just soldier on like Britons do. And he was talking about herd immunity. And he was saying that basically some people will get it, some people will get it worse than others, but the only way to move forward is herd immunity. And he said, otherwise, we will wreck the economy. Otherwise, we will be in a situation where the damage we cause the country will be greater than the damage that would have been caused via COVID. And that's an interesting take, because in hindsight, I think you and I would obviously agree with that. Now, he was shouted down, fundamentally, he was shouted down over that. And that obviously did not come to pass, as we know, because, spectacularly, the government did the very opposite. They went into lockdown after lockdown after lockdown. And the weird thing about the situation with Boris is he was shouted down over that. And really, he was actually right. He was the first person to say that. And in retrospect, he's right. Now, at first, I was quite concerned about COVID. For the first couple of weeks, I thought, oh my gosh, I'd heard all these horror stories coming out of China. And my initial response to COVID was, look, we are in a situation where lots of people could end up dying. And the people who are most likely to die are elderly white people. And my take was, elderly white people are going to die, and they're then going to be replaced with migrants. What we're going to see here is elderly white people dying off and replaced by migrants. And then obviously it became abundantly clear that that was not the case. It became abundantly clear that what we were actually seeing was a massive scam. Huge amounts of money were being made. Vast power grabs were taking place. And the jab was being sold to us that wasn't fit for purpose and would in fact go on to cause huge health problems for people who took it. But at the time, and I'm not saying for long, very early on in COVID, I was concerned. And like you say, we then went through an information gathering period. But it is better to be safe than sorry. You know, in cases like this, a couple of weeks lockdown, when you don't know what something is, it is better to be safe than sorry. And now, looking back on it, if Boris had stuck to his instincts and gone with maybe a limited lockdown for people who were, elderly or at risk, but kept things rolling, things would be very different.
Mm. Okay. Well, so there was that massive mess up. And then, of course, Boris was, with a possible exception. Well, I guess there are other exceptions, but he was a big, big proponent of the war in Ukraine. And he was shuffling back and forth to Kiev. He was even missing party campaign events so he could go hobnob with Brad Zelensky, his good buddy, and came under criticism for that. And so now you've got this, we're on the verge of nuclear war. And I guess he can take credit. If civilization ends, he gets partial credit for it. Hey, I just wanted to read you one thing regarding the immigration, okay? Because I remember last summer us talking a little once. I mentioned to you that there was some sort of news article I saw about Britain deporting illegal migrants to Rwanda to hear that, as they await their refugee status hearings or whatever it was. And, we kind of laughed it off like, oh, as if that's never going to happen. Well, so I saw this article. I came across this article that was published about that time. It's from July 26th from The Guardian, and it's written by two Britons of color, probably people you've never heard of, a Luke Noronha, or Noronha, I guess it's Portuguese name, but Luke Noronha, who's a slightly black person, and Gracie Mae Bradley, who is a British person of substantial melanin. And they're published this article entitled, "Here's Why a Border-Free World Would Be Better Than Hostile Immigration Policies." So it's an article about the desirability of eliminating borders, right? And towards the end, they also say, yeah, well, right, let's eliminate prisons and police. But in the article, and this is what I found kind of curious, this was from late July, and of course, by that time, Boris Johnson had already announced his intention to resign, and you had these eight people who were vying for the to be his successor, including four people of color, three Indians and a somewhat based black lady. And this says that all of them, everybody running, all eight people were in favor of deporting refugees to Rwanda, right? Okay, whatever happened with that? And, you read down further in the article, and it implies that the only reason that never happened was because concerned British activists threw their bodies, they had some demonstration at a refugee camp, my first reading, I thought it was like on the tarmac of the airport, but upon a second read, I guess it was in a refugee camp or a detention center, preventing them from getting on the plane. That's why that first plane never left, is because, concerned English people, concerned British people surrounded the airport because they were concerned about racism and everything. But it's very bizarre. I'm just raising this. You never heard anything more of this whole Rwanda thing, did you?
Well,
and then the other curious thing is half, like, these four non-white British people are so incredibly racist. These four non-white candidates to be the leader of the Conservative Party are that incredibly racist.
Well, I made a video at the time, you've probably forgotten it, which is a big problem, about refugees to Rwanda. And at the time, I made the point that it would never happen. I said, look, this isn't about to happen. What we're going to get here is a situation where they will say they're going to do this, but they will never, in a month of Sundays, make good on this. It's a plan. It's what the Conservatives call a populist positioning policy, where the Conservative Party will actively claim they're about to do something. But when they do it, they'll say they're going to do something that fundamentally they would never do in a month of Sundays. And that is exactly what the situation was with refugees to Rwanda. They were never going to do refugees to Rwanda. What they were always going to do was set something up that the public would agree with and cheer on, and then, knowing farewell, that further down the line, the far left would make sure, or the sort of liberals would make sure, it wasn't ever actually going to take place. And I think that's exactly what happened there, because the public were pretty much up for this. They thought it was a good idea, and the Conservatives were getting great support. But I knew, and I said in the video I made about it, that before the first plane took off, there would be protests, there would be high court challenges, there would be all kinds of sort of legal holdups. And if anyone did get sent to Rwanda, it would be such a shockingly small number, it would make no difference whatsoever. So it'd be a token number. So at worst, not one would end up going. And at best, half a dozen would end up going. But when you're talking about the swamping numbers of migrants that are coming into the UK on a weekly basis, what difference would that make anyway? What difference would a handful of, half a dozen people make? You're talking about potentially on a weekly basis, somewhere between, up to and above 7,000 illegal immigrants come in on a weekly basis, up to and above. And that would be a busy week. Not that we have true figures, because obviously they're coming here illegally, so you can't monitor them all. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm really lowballing it. You know, it has been suggested that, you know, potentially up to 500,000 illegal migrants come here every year. There are different estimates. But what difference would it actually make, Patrick? I mean, fundamentally, when it comes down to it, you know, the difference between the difference between zero and half a dozen is, you know, six. And when you're talking potentially 500,000 illegal immigrants, or up to 500,000 illegal immigrants pouring in per year, really, if you're sending six back,
way down on the levee in old Alabama, there's Daddy and Mammy, there's Ephraim and Sammy. On a moonlight night, you can find them all.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
OPEC Plus is expected to announce a cut in oil production today. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. The oil producers cartel of OPEC Plus is meeting today and is expected to announce the largest cut in oil production since the beginning of the COVID pandemic. Some are forecasting a cut of 1 million barrels a day. That would obviously raise the price of oil and in turn the cost of gasoline. And clearly, a steep increase in gas prices this close to election time would be a disaster for the Democrats. So the Biden administration has launched a full-scale pressure campaign hoping to stop the production reduction. Remember when America was energy independent and a net exporter of energy? Ah, the good old days. If only Biden had not attacked American oil producers, stopped pipelines, and ended leases, and drained the nation's strategic oil reserves. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
Open Gangnam Style. Six. And when you're talking potentially 500,000 illegal immigrants, or up to 500,000 illegal immigrants pouring in per year, really, if you're sending six back, it's like throwing a thimble of water out of the Titanic, isn't it? You're not actually achieving anything. It's just, you know, essentially you're paying lip service, or you're having a, you know, a little tiny protest against something, but it's not meaningful in any real sense. And I think that's what we've got with refugees from Rwanda, just as we had exactly the same thing with the points-based immigration system. We were told that we were going to have this points-based immigration system, and this was going to reduce immigration numbers. It didn't reduce immigration numbers at all. In fact, immigration numbers are the highest they've ever been. The Conservative Party, through their points-based immigration system, granted 1.1 million visas. And 1.1 million visas isn't even 1.1 million people. It's 1.1 million visas, which means for some of these people, that might be 7 or 8 people per visa, because some of them will be family visas. So if you've got a guy coming over from the Indian subcontinent to take a role in, I don't know, the IT sector, he might bring his entire family with him, which, as I said, might be a total of, you know, 12 people. Sorry, eight people. It might be 12 people. So I should imagine 1.1 million visas is at least 2 million migrants. But that's exactly what people voted against. They voted against this open-door immigration system, but we got it just branded up as a points-based immigration system. And I said this at the time when you and I discussed this. The problem with a points-based immigration system is fundamentally the people setting the number of points you need to get in. And I said this about Brexit. The problem with Brexit is if the people carrying out Brexit are fundamentally not people who wanted Brexit, you've got a big problem. And we've got these big problems because the Conservative Party constantly defaults to this populist positioning policy, as they call it, where they pick populist words and phrases to package their policies up within. So people think, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. The Conservatives are speaking our language. No, the Conservatives are using words and phrases that make you believe they're on your side. And then when they realize, when you vote for them, you don't get anything like what you voted for. What you actually get, in many cases, is the exact opposite of what you voted for. And unfortunately, and this is the sad part of all of this, the public don't learn. The public do not learn from their mistakes. You don't end up in a situation where after all of this has happened, the public are like, you know what? We were conned and we ought to learn from this and we ought to vote accordingly next time. At, you know, I say at best and worst. Well, neither are best and neither are really worst. They're the same. You know, on one hand, what you'll end up with is they'll all vote for the same party again. And on the other hand, they'll vote for a party who'll do exactly the same thing or worse because they're voting Labour. So,
well, you know. And that's the state, the absolute state of Britain and most other countries with that share our democracy. But you know, we've run out of time. I wanted to ask. I suppose there's absolutely no chance that Rishi Sunak is going to back off on the whole Ukraine business. That's just.
That's, I think, not, you've even probably got. You've probably got as much chance of, you know, snow in Texas in summer as you have of Rishi Sunak backing off from the Ukraine.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining me, Mark.
Well, look, it's been a great pleasure. I always love starting my week with you, Patrick.
Okay, and we'll look forward to that again. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
As you can plainly see, at night when he's asleep.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.